The gospel lesson for today is from the gospel according to St. John. It is John's version of the call story of the disciples. It is different in some respects than many others. John writes, "The next day Jesus decided to go to Galilee. He found Philip and said to him, 'Follow me.' Now Philip was from Bethsaida, the city of Andrew and Peter. Philip found Nathanael and said to him, 'We have found him about whom Moses in the law and also the prophets wrote, Jesus, son of Joseph from Nazareth.' Nathanael said to him, 'Can anything good come out of Nazareth?' Philip said to him, 'Come and see.' When Jesus saw Nathanael coming toward him, he said of him, 'Here is truly an Israelite in whom there is no deceit.' Nathanael asked him, 'Where did you get to know me?' Jesus answered, 'I saw you under the fig tree before Philip called you.' Nathanael replied, 'Rabbi, you are the Son of God. You are the King of Israel.' Jesus answered, 'Do you believe because I told you that I saw you under the fig tree? You will see greater things than these.' And he said to him, 'Very truly I tell you, you will see the heaven opened and the angels of God ascending and descending upon the Son of Man.'" This too is for us the word of the Lord. Thanks be to God. I've got to tell you that I feel sorry for poor old Eli. I feel sorry for him in large part because he is old, and not the sort of young old that many of you who are here and are north of 80 are. Eli was north of 80, but he wasn't the sort of young old that you are, you who are fit and alert and active, doing your volunteering and attending children's and grandchildren's games and activities and recitals. No, Eli was just old. Old and tired. He probably was ready for the prophet's retirement home, but he wasn't allowed to do that just yet. That's because Eli was still priest to Israel, and that kept him busy pronouncing oracles and burning incense and supervising the offering of sacrifices to God. Now, Eli was also judge in Israel, and if you've ever seen the People's Court or Judge Judy, then you know how exhausting dispensing justice can be, especially when it's two neighbors who are fighting over a stolen CD collection or a landlord complaining that the rent has not been paid in timely fashion. It's just tiring to be a judge. So on top of his duties as priest and judge, Eli is also father to two adult children named Hophni and Phinehas, who are also known as Tadpole and the Nubian, which is kind of like a network TV special. Now, Hophni and Phinehas were supposed to be in training to take over the priesthood from their father when their father died. Unfortunately, these two were about as useful as a chocolate teapot. And they were so crooked they could both hide behind corkscrews. Now, Eli had tried throughout his life, as best a father could, to rein in his son's lying, cheating ways, but sometimes children raised in the parsonage are just hell-bent on destruction, and they're not going to accept correction. God forbid this ever be the case if Marie and I successfully adopt children. Now, as if Eli didn't have enough going on in his life, he had recently become a foster parent to a little boy named Samuel. Samuel's mother, Hannah, had consecrated Samuel to God's service before he was born because she was fulfilling a vow she had made to God. And true to her word, when her child was old enough, Hannah brought him to Eli to begin his apprenticeship as priest. And so, in addition to getting Samuel to school and to soccer practice, Eli was teaching him the finer points of being a priest, trying to avoid the mistakes he had apparently made with his own two sons. Now, believe me, being a priest to God's people is never easy. But Eli's job was made harder by the fact that the word of the Lord was rare in those days, and not many visions had been seen. They were not widespread. I mean, these days, God is all over the place. You find God on Trinity Broadcasting Network and on Sirius Satellite Radio. But back then, people didn't hear from God quite so much, which really didn't help given all the political chaos that was going on in Israel as Israel tried to become a nation worthy of that name. And so one night, after getting Samuel his supper and putting him to bed, Eli was lying down. Because, after all, he was both old and tired, and children can be exhausting. As both master and apprentice lay in their beds, the Lord called to the boy by name, saying, "Samuel, Samuel." Thinking that it was Eli who was calling him, Samuel ran and said, "Here I am," but Eli wasn't there. Eli was in his own room, on the verge of slumber, when the boy Samuel bursts in saying, "Here I am, for you called me." Now, granted, it's true that Eli's eyesight was fading, but not his memory. So Eli said, "I didn't call you. Go back to bed by the ark of God. Go to sleep," which Samuel did. But it couldn't have been an hour later when Samuel bursts in again saying, "Here I am, for you called me." And again Eli said, "But I didn't call you, my son. Go back, lie down, try to go to sleep," which Samuel did. And a third time the Lord called saying, "Samuel, Samuel." And a third time Samuel went to Eli thinking it was him saying, "Here I am, for you called me." At this point that Eli begins to get the picture and perceives that it is the Lord who has been calling the boy. So he instructed Samuel once again to go back and lie down. "If he calls you again," Eli said, "say, 'Speak, Lord, for your servant is listening.'" So Samuel went back and lay down in his place. And sure enough, the Lord came and stood there again, calling, "Samuel, Samuel." And Samuel said, "Speak, Lord, for your servant is listening." It's a charming story, isn't it? The aged priest, the innocent child, the call coming in the night. It seems so simple, so straightforward. Only it isn't. The call of God seldom is. So I'd like to offer this morning a few brief observations about God's calling. First, it seems to me that God doesn't always call at convenient times. The telemarketers don't either, but they're simply annoying. God has something more pressing. Sometimes God calls at, frankly, inconvenient times. This time God calls at bedtime, after Eli had struggled to put the young Samuel to bed, or maybe it was the other way around. Eli had closed up shop, he had turned out the lights, he was soaking his dentures, it had been another day, another dollar in Israel, and still the word of the Lord was rare and visions were scarce. Isn't it telling that God's voice was not really expected, even in God's own sanctuary? Do you and I come to church expecting God to speak to us? So maybe Eli said his bedtime prayers with little expectation that God would answer. But it was that very night that God spoke. God can call when we least expect it. God can call at inopportune times. God can call when we are busy doing something else or when we are looking for someone else. God can call when the money is good and the living is easy. God can call when we are very happily minding our own business, thank you very much, and decide to mix things up. Second, what makes the call of God complicated and even confusing is that God doesn't always announce who it is that's calling. Now, many of us remember that day not so long ago when we would pick up the telephone not knowing who would be on the other end of the line. Of course, caller ID has changed all of that. Now we can glance at a screen and decide immediately whether or not we're going to accept the call. But that technology wasn't available in Samuel's day. And sometimes when God calls us, it isn't available in ours. Sometimes the call comes and it's just a voice in our head. Other times there's just a feeling, a prompting in our spirit, something telling us to do something. Maybe a sermon speaks to us, or maybe it's something we've read or seen on TV. Maybe it's the suggestion of a friend. We don't always know that it is God who is calling. But God always knows when God is calling, for when he calls us by name, as he did with Samuel. Third, because God doesn't always announce who's calling, we sometimes search for answers in the wrong places. Maybe we try an exercise program or resolve to take up yoga. Maybe we think about going back to school or starting a new job. Those aren't bad things on their own. They might be very good and helpful things. But are they the call of God? Is doing yoga going to help us discern what it is we're meant to do in life? Maybe it's that we think we need more money or to exercise more power, whether at the office or the PTA or the neighborhood association. What is the answer? Samuel kept going to Eli in search of answers, but it wasn't Eli who was doing the calling. Now, the irony of the whole story turns on Eli's name. For Eli's name in Hebrew means my God. Again and again and again, Samuel goes to Eli, goes to my God to answer the call, but he's been going to the wrong person. He's going to the wrong place. He hasn't gone yet to the one true God. Which prompts a fourth observation. We can be very involved in ministering to the Lord, as young Samuel was, but we can still not know the Lord. Church can keep us busy from morning to night, 7 days a week, Sunday worship, Monday meetings, Tuesday Bible study, Wednesday night choir practice, Thursday small group, Friday Meals on Wheels delivery, Saturday building with Habitat for Humanity. We can be very, very busy with ministry. Young Samuel was busy with temple work, occupied with learning the ins and outs of having how to be a priest, but he did not yet know the Lord. And the word of the Lord had not yet been revealed to him. As Jesus will much later tell a very busy Martha, we can get distracted by too much ministering. We can become so distracted by our serving and our doing that we don't hear what God wants to say to us. It was important then for Samuel to stop running to and fro in order to listen to what God was trying to tell him. And maybe we do too. I'd observe, fifth, that sometimes it takes other people to help us hear what God is saying. Sometimes that other person is a person like me, a minister, a pastor, a priest. One of my greatest joys in ministry is having someone pull me aside or come into my office and say, you know, I think I'm being asked to be a Bible study leader, or maybe my call is to be a prayer partner. Maybe my call is to attend seminary. Maybe I'm supposed to go on a mission trip, but that other person doesn't have to be a minister. That person may be a parent or a friend. That person may be a Sunday school teacher. That person, whoever they are, however, needs to be someone who is attuned to the will and ways of God. Samuel goes to Eli in part because he has nowhere else to go. He can't go to his parents because he no longer lives at home. So he goes to talk with his spiritual parent, to Eli, who knows the ways of the Lord. Samuel needs Eli's wisdom, Eli's experience to help him make sense of the calling that he has received. You and I need other people to help us make sense of the calling that you and I receive. And finally, I'd observe that God is persistent in calling. When I was younger, I worked briefly for one of the national political parties. It was my job to call members of that party to try to solicit contributions. I was trained not to take no for an answer, to be determined in getting each person to make some kind of contribution. Well, frankly, I flaked out. I didn't want to hound people. I had been on the receiving end of those phone calls, and I just didn't like it, so I simply gave up after the first or second try. But God doesn't. God calls Samuel not once, not twice, not even three times. God calls to Samuel four times, patiently waiting for Samuel to figure out just who it is that's calling him and why. God waited until Samuel had learned how to listen. In our tradition, we call that grace. Grace is God calling to us in the first place. Grace is God calling to us over and over again. Grace is God calling repeatedly and giving us those who help us listen to the call. Grace is God waiting patiently until we've learned how to listen and then respond. And it's ultimately grace that enables us to say, "Speak, Lord, for your servant is listening."